Who's the man who's able to walk a straight line while being watched by an authority figure? It's a junkie. It's a drunk. It's a compulsive overeater. No, it's Sober Man. Welcome to episode 120 of Sober Man Podcast. I'm Al Berman, and I'm your host. How's it going? How are you? It's been a couple of weeks. I was out of town. If you listen to 119, I told you I was going to skip a week. And I'm still going through I feel weird even talking about the iTunes store anymore. I joined Libsyn, this service, Libsyn. I thought you automatically they help you get into the iTunes store, but now I have to do it. And I don't understand it, and there's a tutorial they sent me, and Dwayne's going to look at it, but it's so boring to listen to that they have this girl's voice, this girl who literally walks you through how to set up your Libsyn account. She literally says, okay, the first thing to do is you have to put your name on your account. Oh, that it's just like, really? Can't we just get to the meat of the matter? How do I get into the iTunes store? I only got about 4 to 6 minutes into it, and I couldn't watch it anymore. But I'm going to be probably forced to do it. I'm imploring. Is that the right word? I'm asking in a very strong manner, Dwayne, to look at this, since he's a techie, and maybe he can figure this out. I'm very frustrated with this whole iTunes thing. It just seems like, I'm really not on anybody's radar with this podcast because except for the people that know who I am, and maybe occasionally somebody stumbles upon me, without the iTunes store and this Libsyn network, I got to be in these networks so that people, then I could be recommended and blah, blah, blah. All right, enough whining and complaining. It's going to work out eventually, right? Eventually it all works out because eventually we're all dead. Sorry. Couldn't help that. It's just frustrating because I've been going like on 4 years with this. I mean, not consistently again, but it just seems like it shouldn't be that hard. It's like I talked to my friend Bill. He goes, why can't it be like, you upload a photo to Facebook? I mean, why is it so complicated? And now it's like, anyway, I'm going to get off that. Where have I been? I went and took a trip back to see my family, my dad, my sister, my niece, and my sister's future husband. They're going to get married. They're getting married. She told me they're getting married. She's getting married again. That's her boyfriend, or live-in boyfriend. And it was quite a trip. I had to fly there. It's Michigan. I'm in California. I flew there and I flew back. And I used an airplane both times. But I went through Burbank Airport, which is a much more... I probably spent at least $100 or $200 more going out of that airport than LAX. But it's worth it. It's close to my house. It's a much more relaxed airport. There's no long lines. You get in. But the thing is this. When I fly, because I've had hip surgery and I've got implants in my hips, I now, until they put those machines in, which ironically they have in Grand Rapids. That's where I went to Grand Rapids. Well, the machine where you put your hands up, your arms up, and then it rotates around you. And it's like a couple seconds. And then they can see, whether you're safe or not to fly. Burbank is getting those, they said, soon, but it's still the old-fashioned way, and so I had to have a pat-down. I had to have a pat-down by this guy, but the guy who patted me down, when he first came on duty, I guess, the last time I was there, he was the TSA guy that checked you in, like when you have to show your driver's license and your boarding pass. He was the guy, and I recognized him, and so he wasn't sitting there. He was just coming on duty. And so I was dealing with another person. When I saw him, it was almost like I recognized a celebrity, and I said, oh, hey, I remember you. And he looked a little bit put off. You know, he looked a little put off, like, hey, well, hey, you want me to call? You want me to put you in a FEMA camp? What do you mean, you know me? You don't know me. I said, well, last time I was here, you know, you were the guy over there. He goes, oh, I'm all over the place, he said. You know, he seemed a little bit, maybe he was embarrassed. Maybe he's the kind of guy that doesn't want attention. Maybe that's why he works for the TSA, because he doesn't want attention. And but coincidentally, when I went through the metal detector and it went off, I had to get a pat down. He's the guy that patted me down. And he did such a thorough job. I mean, he practically gave me a full body massage. And to the point where I considered tipping him. Just for a moment, I thought maybe I should give him a 20 because he's just doing such a great job. And he went over literally every inch of me. I you know, he just patted, rubbed me down with his gloves. And then he takes the gloves and he puts it in this machine. And I guess, you know, if you're carrying anything like explosive, a residue will be on those gloves. And thank God I passed. Thank God I didn't accidentally carry any explosives. this guy, I for some reason, I had a vision of this guy. I saw him after work drinking in a bar by himself, just getting completely hammered. Just completely, I could see him in a local bar, you know, a neighborhood bar, one that's not that busy, where, you know, a place where people come in, they drink alcohol to get drunk quick. And he's just in there, and Joe, who's his name? What's it call him, Joe? Joe, another one, Joe? Yeah, give me another one. Give me another one. And eventually, he ends up with his head on the bar. You know, those guys that fall out on the bar. I just saw that guy. It's like, that's what his life could possibly be. I'm not saying it is, because I'm not a psychic, you know. And, you know, even though I am on the Sober Man podcast, I could be an alcohol psychic, a drug psychic. But I just had this vision of him. It just struck me. And then I went into the, you know, the airport, and or got into the, you know, where only the people who are flying can go and the people who work there. And, you know, got the, you know, the traditional overcharging. You know, it's literally a salad. I got a chicken Caesar salad and a bottle of water, $20. Really? Okay. And then I bought some cashews to take with me because I was going to fly into Denver and had a layover. And I just felt like, you know, just to have something like a quick protein fix. And the they only had one bag of unsalted nuts, and that was cashews. And I wanted, and those were $5.99. But when I got to the register, you know, again, I was joking with the ladies about the prices, and the one lady said, "Well, you could get two for $9, and then you're saving money." So now instead of spending $5.99, I'm spending $4.50 each. And I said to her, "Yeah, but I could wait till I land and go back into the actual world and probably get it for a couple bucks." And then they kind of laughed. Yeah, I guess you're right. Anyway, so I had four flights on this trip, two going, two coming, and they were all delayed, except the very last one was delayed by only like 14 minutes, 11 minutes, something like that. But all the first one, we're sitting in Burbank Airport, and first they said that they were overbooked, and they were asking for volunteers to reschedule in exchange for a $150 voucher. And then at one point, I guess they had some volunteers. Then they said we were being delayed because there was some bad weather. Then they said there was a problem with the engine, like it was heating too high. And then they said that we had to get rid of 10 people off the flight now, even though now that was like fully booked. they needed to get rid of 10 people because they had to lessen the weight of the airplane, which, you know, always makes you feel great when you're thinking about, like, just the weight of people could actually affect the way a plane flies. See, there's an incentive to lose weight, folks. There's an incentive to stay off the Butterfingers. And so they were looking for volunteers because they overbooked it. Then they said that they needed 10 more people, and they even threatened to just pull people off who didn't have their seat assignments yet. And luckily, I had my seat assignment. I had a seat assignment, folks. And then the whole time, my sister is, you know, she's texting me, you know, and she's, you know, asking me, like, well, what's going on? And she's like, oh, my, you know, I'm telling her. And she's like, oh. And then, well, I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to talk about my sister and her texting. Because the thing is, I'll just say this, that when you're getting an excessive amount of texting in a situation like that, it starts to become a little bit cumbersome. I don't know. Is that the right word? It's just like you just don't want to keep, you know, you're dealing with a situation. Now the person that you're texting with is you're dealing with. Now it's on two fronts you're dealing with it. And it becomes, it's like it's the energy of it just grows. And it's just like, all right, I'm just going to stop talking about it. So finally we get on the plane. And we have a nice flight to Denver. And Denver is a huge airport. If you haven't been to the Denver airport, I suggest you go. And I suggest you get early. Get there early in case you have to change planes. I landed, let's see, I was at gate like 22, 26. And I had to get to 84. And it's a haul. It's a big haul. You know, I'm trucking through the airport, trucking. And I'm on those kind of, not escalators, but they're kind of, you know, moving sidewalk type things. And I had enough time. I had about an hour or so. And then I got there, and I didn't have a seat assignment on this leg of the trip. And so, and I wanted an aisle seat. So I went up to the counter, and the lady gave me an aisle seat. And I asked her for an aisle seat. She found one for me. And then at one point I'm sitting there and they call my name. You know, when you hear your name called in an airport, you know, and you get a little paranoid, like, really? Am I going to be called into a room? And so this other lady was at the desk now, and she asked me, she goes, did you get your boarding pass? I go, yes, I did. And I show her, and she goes, oh, okay. I said, I wanted an aisle seat. And then she's looking, and she goes, oh, you know, I can get you an even better one. I can get you in economy class, which I don't even, what's economy class? I was below economy class. I'm like, you know, in, you know, poverty class. I don't know what's going on here. And she said, I can get you a front row economy class. It's a 3-seat thing, and there's nobody between you and the other person. I go, let's do it. And it's, you know, it's going to be a lot of leg room. And I said, thank you. And so she put me there. Now, when I called that morning, because I was trying to get aisle seats on both trips, they wouldn't give it to me. United Airlines would not give it to me over the phone. I could have got that same seat over the phone for an extra $50 or $60, but I was already paying a lot of money for this trip, and I said, no way. So, you know, naturally, by the time the plane is going to take off and nobody's bought those seats, then I guess the people who work for them are free to put you wherever they want to put you. And so I'm sitting in the front of economy class, and the next class over in front of us is first class. And there's like a little very flimsy curtain that they didn't use right away, but they used when they started to serve. Like they gave out hot towels. They gave out a blanket to the people. I could just see it. I'm sitting there like, you know, looking from the outside in, you know, and it started getting cold. I'm wearing shorts, and I wanted a blanket. And, when I was thinking, are they going to refuse me a blanket when I asked? But when our flight attendant came over, I asked her for a blanket. She got me one. But anyway, these people were also served food. And folks, I want to tell you, they started to heat this food up. I guess it, you know, they microwave it. They don't have a kitchen there. They're not cooking it in an oven, and it smelled absolutely disgusting. It was the most horrendous smelling food. It was like, I want to say it's like bad Stouffer's or bad, you know, some kind of bad something that you wouldn't, I would never want to have. And at one point, the first class flight attendant came over to where we were and where I was, and I mentioned it to her. I said, "Boy, that food that you're cooking smells really bad." And she started laughing because she knows. She knows. You know, wow, good luck to you, first class people. You got a 2-hour flight, 2.5-hour flight in first class. I hope your company's paying for this trip. So I'm in this economy class. I'm on the aisle seat, and there's a girl comes on, a young girl, college age girl, and she comes on with a dog, and she sits in the aisle, the next aisle over. So we're like kind of, there's an aisle separating us. And, you know, cute dog. It was like a part Shar Pei. Is that what she said? Part Shar Pei, part something. Really adorable dog. Kind of a long, not a small dog, not a huge dog, but a, kind of a nice-sized dog. And this dog had the sweetest demeanor. And I was asking her, why do you have a dog? And she says, well, it's a service dog. My doctor prescribed this dog. Like, the dog, it's to calm her down while she's flying. Apparently, if you, that's what, 'cause I see people in supermarkets here in Los Angeles coming to the supermarket. They need a dog to come into the supermarket. Like they have so much anxiety that they can't shop for food without having a dog to calm them down. So I was like, oh, okay. So I was kind of thinking, like, I hope this dog, you know. And I said, the dog had never flown before. You know, this isn't sounding very good, right? The dog's never flown before. And I go, and she said, well, but she said he's already had a couple of accidents in the airport, so I think he's kind of empty, she said. You know, apparently he got nervous and he did a couple of number twos in the airport. So I said, okay, all right, fine. There's nothing I can do about it. Let's go with the flow. Let's go with the flight. He didn't say go with the flow or go with the flight. Say both. So we take off, and you know, when you start to take off, you're going down the runway, and you're going faster and faster, and the plane is like shaking a little bit or a lot, and it's making noise. And this dog just looked up and looked around, and then it just kind of laid at her feet the whole trip. And it was such a cute, sweet dog, such a sweet sweetheart. And then during the flight, right outside the window on my side of the plane, the side of the plane I'm sitting on, was this most amazing electrical storm I've ever seen, where it was continuous. I posted on Facebook. If you go to my Facebook page, you can see it. It's about a minute. The guy that was sitting at the window, this kid, nice kid, he took my phone and filmed it for me. And it was so beautiful and amazing. I wasn't scared. I don't get scared in situations like that. I get scared because I can't get into the iTunes store. That's what scares me. I get scared if my phone doesn't, you know, do what I want it to do. But if I'm in 35,000 feet in the air and there's an electrical storm 40 miles to my left, I'm fine. Apparently it was 40 miles away. And the pilot said it was 40 miles away, which was meant to let us know that it was okay, but we're far enough away. To me, I thought 40 miles didn't seem that far when you're in the air, but, you know, I don't know anything about this. And so if you want to see footage of that, go to my Facebook page. And then towards the end of the flight, the dog, somehow she got, the girl, she got a bowl of water for, because the dog hadn't had any water, and he was drinking the water. And then we landed, and he was such a good dog. I mean, you know, I commended her and him about what a great, you know, well-behaved dog. And there were also a couple babies on the flight, I find out, as we're deplaning, deboarding, whatever the word is. So the babies were cool. Everybody was cool on this flight. And so I let the girl and the dog go ahead of me. And I get off the plane, and you go down that hallway, and then you come out into the, you know, the area where the gates are, you know, where the lobbies, the, you know, where the main part of the airport. And there's this dog squatting down and having a number two moment that is quite, it's running. Let's just say he's having a running moment. And it was just like, oh my God, he waited until he got off the plane. He was just such a gentleman. And I felt so bad for her, for the dog, you know, and my dad asked me, my dad goes, who cleaned it up? Like, I don't know, I didn't stick around. I was going to stick around and supervise the cleanup. My dad has a habit of asking questions like that. So that's that. So then I went to, I got picked up by my family. I had flown a couple thousand miles or so. It was 12:30 in the morning. They picked me up. It was way past their bedtime. And I'm 3 hours behind them, right? Because it was 12:30. So for me, it's 9:30. And they drop me off at a hotel, and then they go home. And so now I'm all by myself. And I'm thinking to myself, ah, this is great. This is nice. I come this thousands of miles just to be by myself. But I knew that was going to happen. I was just, you know, I was prepared. And I had a nice time with my family. It was very, there was times, you know, we were kind of commemorating my mom's passing. It was a year anniversary of her passing. We had my sister made this great Italian feast, and she invited some people over. Not everybody could come, but my niece Abby had a couple friends, Ken and Daniela. Shout out to them. They asked for a shout out, or Danielle did. Shout out, shout out. And apparently they're all, they're pot smokers. My niece told me, listen, they smoke pot. They're probably going to smoke some pot when they're here. Is that going to bother you? And I go, no, I don't care. As long as they don't blow it in my face. And so they went outside. And, you know, my dad goes out and smokes cigarettes. Well, they got my dad high. And my niece wanted me to come out and get high. I was trying to explain to her that marijuana is a gateway for me. Gateway drug. I'll end up, you know, going back to drinking or taking cocaine, whatever. At least that's what I feel. And if I feel that way, it's probably true. And I've done enough experimenting, so I don't need to experiment anymore. But they got high, and I said to my niece, don't worry. I've done so much. My DNA has been altered by all the marijuana I've smoked in my life. I will be so funny when you come back in. I'll make you laugh because I totally understand the mindset. And I did. I made them all laugh. I mean, my dad was laughing. My dad had that kind of that stony look on his face. I couldn't believe it. When I used to want to get high with, I used to want to get high with my dad. He wouldn't get high with me. But he had some, and I thought it relaxed him. I actually recommended that he do it in a little bit. Not every day, but, you know, once in a while. So that was fun. But my hotel was kind of a drag. And I stayed there last year, but it's kind of like a real white trash kind of. It was the cheapest one I could find at the time. I think next time I'll spend a little more money. It's kind of a white trash place. As a matter of fact, that's the name of the place, the White Trash Inn. It's the White Trash Inn. I mean, there's people walking around drunk. I mean, really, seriously drunk. And I asked one of the managers one time, I said, there's so many drunk people here. He goes, yeah, I know, they come here from out of town to work in construction. He told me, I don't understand. They get completely hammered at night, and then they go to work and build things in the daytime. It's just crazy. At one point, there was a guy that ran the hotel at night, overnight, like from 11 at night till 7 in the morning. He had a couple days off, so there were women running it. And when the women run it, they keep the hotel locked down, so in order to get in, you have to have your key card, or buzz the buzzer, or call them. And I went out to smoke a cigar, and I got locked out, and I couldn't get in for like back in for like 10, 15 minutes because there was one person working, and they got her probably they're also doing laundry, so she's probably in the laundry, is making a lot of noise, so I got stuck out there, and then my first night there, the first day there, I come back after my first full day, and my room wasn't cleaned. They didn't clean my room, and that was kind of not nice. And so I complained, and then the next day I made sure that before I left, I said, I want to make sure that that they're going to clean my room. And I went to the front desk, and the guy says, yeah, you're on the list. He goes, there's a list? Don't they just clean the rooms every day? And then one night, they have a little smoking section. It's a two benches, four benches, something like that, in front of the hotel, far enough away from the hotel so the smoke's not going to travel into the hotel. And there was a white trash couple drinking pretty good. They had a little girl, must have been, I don't know if she's five, she's six, she's seven. And she's playing with rocks. Well, no, when I first sat down, she wasn't playing with rocks. First sat down, I said to them, you know, I hope you don't mind I smoke, because they're smoking cigarettes, I hope you don't mind I smoke a cigar. You know, and the little girl goes, well, I don't know what a cigar is. And the father goes, well, it's like a cigarette, except it looks like a dog turd. That's what he said to his daughter. And then at one point, she's playing with rocks, and we're under a gazebo, and she hits the gazebo with the rocks, and I'm like, I got my phone out, and I go, whoa. And then the mother tells her to put the rocks down, and then the mother takes the rocks away from her, and then she finds other rocks. She's throwing them at the building. And then they finally go home, go to sleep. And next morning they have like a free breakfast down in the dining room. And I go down there, and the white trash couple are eating breakfast, and the little girl is laying on two chairs, her head on a chair and her legs on another, in her pajamas. And I'm like, boy, oh boy, these people are just amazing. That was my, and I got one free night because I complained. My sister actually inspired me to ask for like a free night or two. You know, I said a free night or two, but they went with free. First, the manager said, well, I'll give you 10,000 points. I said, I don't know what I'm going to do with points. Give me a free night right now. And so she did. And then I flew back home, and when I flew home, the first plane was delayed a little bit. The second plane, I had literally like less than an hour to get from where I landed to my gate. But because we were delayed, when we landed, I had like about 10 or 15 minutes. And luckily, the gate that I landed in was just across the way from the gate where I was going. And so I was either the last person or next to last person on the plane. And it was fantastic. I made the plane. And landed in Burbank, got a cab home. I had a couple friends offer to pick me up, and I thought it's close enough to my house. I don't want to make somebody come to the airport and not, you know, have to kind of follow my flight. And had this Armenian guy, older guy, drive me home. I asked him where he's from. He said Armenia, and I said Inchpases, which is like a greeting. It's a greeting in Armenian. And all right, oh, you know Armenia. Well, I know I've got some Armenian friends. And then he goes into this whole dissertation about Armenians, Armenia, you know, the Holocaust. He's going on and on. He's ranting and raving about, and then at one point he almost went through a stop sign. And I just tried to like give out like, listen, I'm not going to engage anymore. And I was just like, just make a left here, go there. And I got home safely. And that's it. Okay, that's my trip, folks. I think I've covered almost everything I wanted to cover. And it's, you know, this is about the length of the podcast should be. Shouldn't be any more than what it is. Shouldn't be any less, but it shouldn't be any more. It's good to be back doing this. Again, I hope to resolve this whole Libsyn iTunes thing. I was getting really depressed about it today, but I thought, yeah, you know what? There's more important things to be depressed about in this way. If you're going to be depressed, there's other things you can be depressed about. So let's not be depressed. I guess the point I'm making is don't be depressed. That's it, folks. Thank you for all, any and all of people that listen to my podcast. Really appreciate it. I'm going to end the podcast like I've been doing lately with a song from my band that was from the 80s, Imitation Life. This song is called More Than One Clue. I wrote this song by myself. I am the lead singer on this song, as I am on all the songs. And I hope you enjoy it. So until next time, this is Al Berman from the Sober Man Podcast. Take care.
Feelings are so strange, the best to let me free.